The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we'll dig deeper into the theme of October issue of Our State Magazine, which has been about mountain masterpieces. And our lead article for today is entitled Appalachian Spring, and this is from the Hidden History section of the magazine. Since we had 5 weeks this week, this month, we're able to add some other articles from other sections. The story behind Andrews Geyser is deep, complex, and as irrepressible as the man-made fountain itself. It goes back to 1870s when the railroad finally climbed the Blue Ridge Escarpment near Old Fort. The tragic cost of that achievement is still being uncovered today. By the time this photo was taken in October 1971, Andrews Geyser was the last vestige of a 19th century hotel in Old Fort and of a bygone era of rail travel in western North Carolina. And so we see a lagoon and a mound in the middle of the lagoon with the man-made geyser coming up from that. Let's learn a little bit more about that. Some people are called to a specific mission in life. Steve Little's calling came disguised as the sound of a train threading its way through the Swannanoa Gap as he lay awake in his bunk at Cap Ridgecrest near Black Mountain in the early 1960s. His ears would perk up as the night train downshifted, coming up the steep grade, entered the Swannanoa Gap Tunnel, and emerged on the other side of the Eastern Continental Divide, a few hundred yards from his cabin. I would sometimes imagine, where's that train going? What's it like to ride that train at night? He says, and I never had any idea where all of that would lead. As it happens, Little now stands precisely where all that led. He's strolling across the peaceful grounds of Andrews Geyser just outside Old Fort. The track that once carried the train of his youth loops around and above the monument, offering a clue as to how a canny and civil engineer conquered the Blue Ridge Escarpment. Today, Little is a successful attorney and the mayor of Marion, but those professional pursuits can't compete with an 8.4-mile stretch of steel rails, cross ties, and tunnels that are the objects of his lifelong fascination. A serpentine route that proved experts wrong, opened western North Carolina to the world, and left a tragic legacy that has yet to be completely unearthed. After the Civil War, the North Carolina legislature committed state money to continue the western expansion of rail service beyond the Blue Ridge. A pair of businessmen and opportunists, George W. Swepson and Milton S. Littlefield, secured control of the railroad. The men turned out to be lousy railroad builders, but gifted swindlers. They laid a few substandard miles of track before making off with most of the funds. Swepson and Littlefield's hijinks left the railroad at a standstill in the shadow of its last great obstacle, the Blue Ridge Escarpment. The state ultimately bought the meager railroad assets in an auction and made two fateful decisions. They tapped a talented engineer, Major James W. Wilson, to try and figure out how to vault the Blue Ridge. And, because of the cash-strapped condition of the Treasury, they chose to use convict labor to continue laying track. Many of the prisoners, 95% of whom were black, were convicted on flimsy charges and sentenced to 5 years of hard labor solely to provide manpower for the railroad project. The decision to use convict labor was, and remains, a profound tragedy. Convict leasing was common at the time, an early example of the oppressive Jim Crow laws that haunted black people in the South for almost a century. In all, more than 3,000 men and several hundred women were sent from the penitentiary in Raleigh to build the railroad, cook, and maintain the work camp. During that time period, just about all the railroads in eastern United States, and especially the South, were built by convict labor, says Dan Pierce, professor emeritus of history at UNC Asheville. Pierce attended summer camp with Little and now lives in Ridgecrest, a short distance from the tracks where the train's horn still echoes across the mountains. Wilson believed that he had what it took to conquer the mountains. His solution to constructing the train track from Henry Station, just west of Old Fort, to the top of the escarpment, a direct line distance of just over 3 miles, was a circuitous 8.4-mile route that looped back on itself multiple times to avoid the steepest terrain, while establishing an average grade of 2 feet of elevation gain per 100 feet. Even so some sections of the Blue Wall could only be overcome by blasting 7 tunnels through solid granite using new and highly unstable explosive, nitroglycerin. The unheralded labor carried out by the railroad workers remains a staggering achievement. Deadly accidents were commonplace, yet work continued. Perhaps the most representative example of their accomplishments occurred in 1877. Wilson had concluded that the most efficient way to build the 1,832-foot-long Swannanoa Gap Tunnel was to dig simultaneously from both ends. So hundreds of workers lifted a 12-ton locomotive onto the dirt stagecoach road and proceeded to lay one section of temporary track in front of the train at a time. The men, aided by several oxen, pushed and pulled the steam engine 6 miles over the gap to facilitate excavation on the western side of the tunnel. On March 11, 1879, Wilson wired Governor Zebulon B. Vance that daylight entered Buncombe County today through the Swannanoa Tunnel. But shortly thereafter, Little says, a partial tunnel collapse took the lives of 19 prison workers and a guard. Despite the tragic setback, the first train chugged through the tunnel on its way to Asheville a year and a half later. It's a feat, and a horrible feat in many ways, Pierce says. We know from penitentiary records that at least 130 died, and we're pretty sure a lot more than that died. I've always said that stretch of railroad is a massive graveyard. Like I tell my students, it's complicated, and Wilson is at the heart of that complication. But tragically, the loss of life faded from memory. The railroad was a boon to the mountains, drawing tourists and timber barons, and transforming the region both economically and culturally. To this day, Pierce considers it the most important piece of infrastructure in the history of Western North Carolina. Wilson capitalized on the project by teaming up with railroad executive Alexander Boyd Andrews to build the 5-story Round Knob Hotel alongside the tracks near Old Fort. Nearby, they created a spectacular fountain. Water from a pond several hundred feet above the hotel dropped via a 6-inch pipeline that ran underground into a high-pressure nozzle, sending a stream more than 100 feet into the air. Because of the train's circuitous route, passengers could see the spectacle multiple times on their way up and down the mountain. The fountain served as a calling card for the hotel, helping it compete with contemporaries like the Battery Park Hotel in Asheville. The Round Knob Hotel thrived until it was destroyed by fire in 1903. Nature reclaimed the site of the hotel and the fountain until George Fisher Baker, a banker, philanthropist, and one of the richest men in America at the time, stepped in. He remembered the fountain fondly, having passed it as he traveled in his private train car to Asheville, and resolved to have it restored. When the work was completed in 1912, he deeded the fountain to Southern Railway, which had purchased the railroad and renamed it Andrews Geyser to honor his friend and fellow railroad board member. His one stipulation, Southern Railway must care for the fountain in perpetuity. Within a half century, though, despite Southern Railway's promises, nature triumphed a second time. Enter Steve Little. By 1969, he'd read John Iles' novel, The Road, and realized it was a fictional version of a story about the very same stretch of railroad that had captivated him as a child. He'd also visited Andrews Geyser as a camper at Ridgecrest. It was like this treasure planted in the middle of the woods, he remembers. It was the most remarkable thing I'd ever seen, shooting 120 feet in the air above the trees and shrubs. that just blew my mind. How is it here? When it came time for him to write a thesis for his history degree, Little immediately knew what the topic would be, the building of the railroad up the Blue Ridge Escarpment. When he entered law school at Wake Forest University, he learned how to conduct deed research. He went looking for the deed to the Andrews Geyser and discovered the perpetual care clause upon which George Fisher Baker had insisted. Having seen the condition of the fountain firsthand, the precocious young lawyer wrote to Southern Railway, cited the deed, and reminded them of their obligation to care for the fountain. The railroad politely brushed him off, but Little and the community leaders from Old Fort were undeterred. Ultimately, Southern Railway deeded the fountain to the town, which happily embraced the obligation to care for it. Boy Scouts and community volunteers cleared the overgrowth, cleaned out the basin, and rededicated the fountain in 1976. Over the years, Little and Pierce's fascination with the rail line continued. Pierce kept researching the troubled history of convict labor in North Carolina. Little wrote two books about the railway and developed a one-man play that dramatized the construction through the eyes of a prisoner. In 2021, Pierce suggested that they form an organization to create a memorial to the men and women who built the railway. The rail, the R-A-I-L, Railroad and Incarcerated Laborers, the Rail Memorial Project was born. In October 2021, members of the nonprofit gathered on the grounds of Andrews Geyser to dedicate a monument crafted by Paul Twitty II, an old Fort Mason with ties to the railroad. In 2023, the group dedicated a second memorial located near the western entrance of the Spananoa Gap Tunnel to the workers who died during construction. Even though the memorial was created almost 150 years after the railroad was built, the words of poet and author Clint Smith speak to the efforts by Little, Pierce, and the Rail Project volunteers to recall the sacrifices of those who were so long ago forgotten. No stone in the ground can make up for a life, and yet we must try to honor those lives and to account for this history as best we can. It is the very act of attempting to remember that becomes the most powerful memorial of all. Andrews Geyser can be found on Mill Creek Road in Old Fort, North Carolina. And you can look up more information about Andrews Geyser at ourstate.com/AndrewsGeyser. There's a little side article here along with this story entitled Written in Stone. Old Fort resident Paul Twitty II is a fourth-generation stonemason whose cousin once worked for Southern Railway. Twitty and his friend James Logan were selected by the Railroad Incarcerated Laborers Memorial Project, Rail Project, to make the stone frame that holds two marble tablets honoring the incarcerated workers who built the Western North Carolina Railroad. They used locally sourced mountain rock along with river rock from nearby Mill Creek to create the frame and embedded railroad spikes in the design to symbolize the railroad. During the 3 weeks of construction, Twitty had time to reflect. There were 3,000 men and hundreds of African American women, and they laid those tracks to bring that railroad up the mountain. They were on my mind, he says. I'm not a preacher, but God sees all of this, and he was with those people and all the trouble they went through. The spirit of Twitty's late mother was nearby, too. Twitty cherishes a photo of her at 22, sitting on a stone bench near Andrews Geyser, 20 feet from where he worked. To build a monument right there where my mother once sat for a picture, it was just a privilege for me to do that. Our next article is entitled Confection Perfection. A Highlands baker combines sugar, flour, and imagination to create edible masterpieces. And a little inset here. Every magnificent creation at Edelweiss Pastry Boutique is entirely edible and delicious, from the chocolate stems to the sponge cake moss. And so we've got a picture here. It's actually very colorful. It's a very close-up. I'm not sure these items are that large, but one looks like an acorn, an edible acorn made of chocolate, and then the bottom part is variegated with shades of brown and gold and rust and so forth at the bottom of the acorn. And then there's a mushroom that I'm assuming is a cake base, and then there's like a globe top on shiny with coconut around the edges, and there's a little basket, a little bag of that's chocolate, like molding chocolate at the bottom. So very, very colorful there. Oksana Shelgagova can't sleep. Not yet. She's up late, the scent of chocolate wafting through her kitchen as she folds together layers of butter and dough. She's making airy chocolate sponge cake and whipping up fluffy mousse and melting Belgian chocolate that she'll then cool and craft into delicate flourishes that she promptly freezes. The pastry artist and chocolatier will be up early, too. Leaf peeping season is one of the busiest times of the year at her Highlands shop, Edelweiss Pastry Boutique. Last October, she figures she only slept about 3 to 4 hours each night. This late-night prep gives her the head start she needs. In the morning when I open the door, I inhale the smell of my kitchen, and I become a different person, Shelgagovich says. I'm a chef. I know exactly what to do and how. As the sun rises, she'll fuse many of the elements she worked on the night before. When she's finished, 2 dozen larger-than-life, red-capped mushrooms will sprout from her work table like something out of a storybook. Her signature and most complex creation in Edelweiss's number one bestseller, the mushroom petit gâteau, or little cake. Its cap is made from a thin layer of crunchy pâté sablé, a crumbly, cookie-like crust, beneath a dome of white chocolate mascarpone mousse that's filled with red currant confit and coated with a shiny red mirror glaze. Its stem is dark chocolate mousse filled with black currant confit, surrounded by a thin layer of textured white chocolate. It grows next to a chocolate sponge cake log, which is covered with delicate green moss and studded with tiny chocolate daisies. Like adding an artist's signature, Shelgachova gently brushes more moss onto a delicate dark chocolate leaves that look like they've fallen off the trees outside the shop. She then places them on top of each mushroom, this batch taken from start to finish, 3 days. Each one is a miniature masterpiece, and each bite confirms that it tastes like one, too. The mousse is both fluffy and creamy, and smooth as velvet. The confit balances the chocolate. Somehow, none of it is too sweet, and every tiny detail is edible. Depending on the season and the whims of Shelgachova, the ingredients and flavors change. But one thing doesn't. By the end of the day, they'll all be eaten. Come to think of it, she wonders, should she make more? Born into a family of bakers in the Donetsk region of Ukraine, her mom and dad owned a restaurant and made cheese and bread. At 5 years old, Shelgachova began absorbing the basics and subtleties of baking and her parents' passion for their profession. I remember the smell of sourdough bread and these big cheese-making machines, she said, and I remember Mama stirring. Papa was like the boss. And I remember this feeling of preparation, even though it was totally different from what I'm making now. After graduating from the National Art Academy in Kiev with a degree in art design, she followed her heart to Australia, where she earned a second degree from the Australian Patisserie Academy and began combine her eye for design with her love of confections. First, she trained to be a chocolatier, learning how to create edible sculptural masterpieces. But soon she wanted to take her talents further and incorporate her chocolate into cakes, later studying under world-famous pastry chefs. Nearly 15 years ago, she arrived in Highlands, and in 2017 began a pastry business from her home kitchen, collaborating with local hospitality and fine cuisine juggernauts like Old Edward's Inn, Wolfgang's Restaurant and Wine Bistro, The Park on Main, and Kula Jasa Club. In 2018, she was hired as the pastry chef at a new restaurant, where she was given free rein to test out new ideas, to experiment and play, and to see what stuck. For every single pastry chef, what is their weapon? She asks. Her voice is soft but strong, with a lilting Ukrainian accent, and there's fire in her eyes. It's their recipe. This is my power. Every pastry chef has their own signature. It might be considered better if someone else does it differently, but this is mine. I love it when people love mine. So slowly, her own signature concept, Edible Art, took shape, and finally in May 2023, she opened Edelweiss in a charming white house surrounded by hydrangea bushes near downtown Highlands. Each morning, customers order warm pastries like almond croissants and cinnamon buns, and sip coffee in the cool mountain air on the expansive front porch or cozied up inside by the fire. And each afternoon, a small line forms by the glass display cases. Everyone wants a peek at her edible art exhibit: palm-sized lemons and strawberries, apples and pumpkins, pears and cherries, so detailed, the stems, the dimples and seeds, the colors, they look plucked out of still-life paintings. Her famous mushrooms and acorns appear to have been gathered from the floor of a fairy tale forest. It's enough to inspire spontaneous applause and oohs and ahs. Each of Shel Gajova's tarts, petit gâteau, eclairs, bouchées, a small pastry shell with sweet cream filling, and entremets, a small layered cake encased in mousse and enrobed in a glaze, is edible to the last bite, but is so beautiful that it may be temporarily break your heart to cut into it and make you wonder if it breaks hers. It doesn't matter how quickly they are eaten, she says. What matters is the emotions they evoke in you, and those emotions will stay with you forever. The feeling of special attention is the most important thing in my work, to make a person feel special and loved. Each one represents not only her perfectionism and artistry, but also her imagination. I just see desserts in everything, she says. I feel them and I want to make them. Take a bee, for example. Well, a bee is shaped like an egg. You dip it in yellow glaze, and then you use chocolate to make the lines on its body. Two wings and a stinger. Then what's inside? Of course, honey cake, right? Things like caramel, a little bit of Maldon salt to balance the sweetness, and something crunchy, not chewy, on the bottom. She trails off, lost in thought and brimming with inspiration. She pushes black-rimmed glasses up on the bridge of her nose. I see it, she says. I just need silence, and then I know how to make it. She delights in the challenge. In addition to the dozens of different desserts that line the display cases at Edelweiss, she also makes intricate and elaborate cakes and chocolate sculptures, which she works on in between her daily bakes. A feat, considering that at her busyness, she once sold several hundred mushrooms and acorns in a single day. Because her time is finite, she seeks out more complex bakes and designs, always pondering how to take a piece to the next level. You want a carrot cake, she says? Okay, let's make a carrot cake, but let's make it more interesting. Let's put smoked oranges inside. Let's bake the nuts more deeply and caramelize them. I would love to make something special for you to say, oh my gosh, this is the best carrot cake ever. She pauses. I'm trying to only take a wedding cake every 10 days. Is that a lot? She asks with a laugh. This is boundless happiness. When you work 20 hours a day and fall asleep on the go, you can't understand that you understand that you need sleep, but you can't wait until the morning to get to go through it all again. It's pure love. So Shel Gajova can't sleep. Not yet. Glazes are setting. Chocolate is freezing. Ideas are swirling. She'll stay up late and soak in the silence. Soon, she says, she'll start on a new cake, a beautiful cake. An old stump and an owl should come out of the top. I don't know how it's going to turn out yet. It's still up there, she says, pointing at her temple and smiling. For more information on Edelweiss Pastry Boutique from Highlands, North Carolina, go to ourstate.com/Edelweiss-Highlands. I will tell you a little bit about a couple of the photos in this piece because they're just pretty fabulous. An Edelweiss acorn is actually a whole hazelnut dipped in smooth chocolate filling, coated in milk chocolate, and covered with hazelnut pieces. So the bottom portion is a hazelnut, and then it's, I guess, dipped into a marbleized chocolate, so that it has those colors that are in the base of the acorn, and then the top of it is with the hazelnut pieces in the chocolate, and it's kind of roughed up a little bit to make it look like the top of an acorn. And then there's another picture that is the cake that she had in her idea about the old stump of a cake. It's a German chocolate birthday cake made out of chocolate, out of Belgian chocolate. And there is in fact an owl seated on the stump, and along the edges are what look like moss, which I'm sure are edible something, and little daisies and little mushrooms, red mushrooms with white dots on them coming out of the side of the mushroom. It's incredible. It looks like a sculpture. The moss is made of sponge cake. Everything is made out of Belgian chocolate, so that's pretty incredible. Worth a visit if you're out that way. From the house and home area, the artist section, we have, out of Weaverville, Birds of the Wood. After decades of caring for animals in Western North Carolina, an expert woodworker crafts heritage carvings that look ready to take flight. You work with a lot of animals. You kind of know what they're going to do before they do it, Tony Dills says in a low Appalachian twang. In his almost three decades as an assistant animal curator at Asheville's Western North Carolina Nature Center, he learned that squirrel monkeys bite errant fingers and that an elephant will move for an orange. Now retired, he's turned his attention toward the birds outside his Weaverville home. He watches them gather at the feeders from his kitchen table, where he whittles blocks of northern basswood into an aviary using little more than patience and carbon steel case pocket knife. Since 2012, the Buncombe County native has shared mountain heritage carving through the Southern Highland Craft Guild, carrying on the legacy of his teacher and dear friend, Edsel Martin. Delicate shavings curl from a cardinal as Dills draws the short blade along its belly, scalloping the surface in confident strokes. Cutting with the wood's tight grain, he leaves the sculpture silky and smooth as if it were covered in actual feathers before applying bright acrylic paint and perching it on a driftwood often harvested from North Carolina lakes, sometimes by his wife, Patricia. A lot of these guys that carve birds, they get out their calipers and measure all the feathers. I just eyeball mine, Dill says with a chuckle, but his keen, natural eye imbues his work with an irresistible vitality, as if the wood could come at any moment burst into cheerful song. To learn more about his work, visit SouthernHighlandsGuild.org and search for artist Tony Dills. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and then you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired and is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.